afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and thank you for coming again and joining me on this particular recording of episode 131 out of our journey on the Localization Fireside Chat podcast. Since 2023, toward the end of the year, we've recorded 131 episodes with today's episode. So the audience continues to grow. Happy to report we're averaging about 1,000 downloads per day now. And that's a great number for a very focused podcast. We're not trying to be anybody in this podcast. We're just trying to be a voice of professional business and professional industries out there and trying to take people who are such as my guest today. And I've got the distinct pleasure and the honor to be joined by David Smith. David is the CEO of Elderberry.Work. I can't wait to get to know David and what he does. And David, as we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. So let's start with this one. What is your story? Welcome to the conversation, by the way.
Thanks, Robin, and it's great to be here. So I did an undergrad in environmental science way back before it was in vogue, and I learned about climate change, you know, way back then. Initially, there wasn't a lot of application for it, but the last 25 years, I've been able to merge it in with my business experience. I did an MBA later and that sort of thing, time in my life, aside from having kids, of course. And so we raised $60 million, won best of show at CES. Cisco had a deal to buy us, and then the market dropped. We imploded in 2000. So I moved on to become an executive at Whole Foods Market in Austin, Texas. I say that because with that experience, when they talk about Canada being a weak entrepreneurial culture, that we don't scale businesses very well, and that we don't commercialize our intellectual property very well, I can relate to that because I see kind of what the American experience is like, and it's quite dramatically opposed to what we're doing. And so as I thought about it, I thought, you know, there's an elegantly simple solution to this, and it's staring us right in the face. It's a bunch of people out there like you and me aging up. No offense, but we're not these anymore. So we're aging up, and we got a lot of experience. And that experience is, in some cases, in many cases, not being leveraged the way it could be. A lot of times we're hard to find, fall through the cracks. I would argue that our economy is not deep enough to absorb this big cohort of boomers and those after into the workplace. There's too many of us. We're dominated by large companies that have become quite ruthless in their headcount reduction. So we're not carrying as many people as they used to. And so that means that we got a lot of excess talent out there with really killer experience. We got nearly 100 signed up on our platform so far. And what I created was a B2B services platform that allows the people with experience, proven experience, and I use age 45 plus as my branding or signifier, the value of experience. We help them inject their experience into startups and small and medium businesses, you know, for fractional consulting, contracting work, whatever the business needs. It's a temporary nature. It's meant to fill knowledge gaps and accelerate their business growth and de-risk it because you got people who've been there, done that.
So on your side, I mean, you must have seen that need before you decided to engage in a more formal way of finding a solution to lots of skills, as you said, aging workforce, and try to place that skills and knowledge and intellectual property back into the workforce in some way or another, fractional. Yes, that's one. So take us back to the moment when the idea kicked in. When did the idea click in? Were you out of the work at the time, or were you just on your way out? How did you come up with that? And when? What's the timing?
So I did my undergrad in environmental science and later did an MBA. So I did a number of things, but I was vice president of sustainability for a large Canadian company and, you know, built up a pretty good following, was known on international global committees, got speaking appearances all over the world. And then took a package when a new CEO came in, decided didn't need a sustainability lead. So I built up a consulting practice and, it went very well until COVID came around and that affected everybody. But I thought, you know, most consultants will tell you that the way they find gigs is referrals. And I thought, why be limited to the referral network a company or an individual might have? You might find people, but maybe they're not ideal for what you want. And so I thought, we got to expand the pool of talent that's out there, that's available, that's accessible. Stats Canada talked about for the knowledge worker, it's not a shortage. So for the skilled laborer, it's a shortage in Canada. The knowledge worker is a mismatch, which means that the businesses just can't easily find them. They're out there, they can't find them. And so we solve that. We connect with age 45 plus consultants. They haven't been career consultants, by the way. If they've learned how a business operates by being in the business, and now they're independent consultants, you know, later on in their career. So they offer that operating plus the strategic experience as well.
And so for you, as a personal experience, part of the getting to know you kind of a segment here, you've been like an executive, as you mentioned earlier, and a startup leader, a consultant, and a small business owner. Which of those roles, in your opinion, would have shaped you in a way to build elderberry.org right now? Which one would have pushed you to that?
You know, I think that's a great question, because it's really a composite.
Combination of all? Yeah,
because I've been on both sides of the table. You know, I've been hiring consultants and hiring talent. I've also been on that side, you know, pitching and being hired. And so I understand that dynamic, and I think that's really kind of where it came from.
And the name Elderberry, like, I mean, as soon as you and I talked a couple of times before, right? The name Elderberry is a bit unusual in the business context. What's the story behind the name?
Yeah, as I was thinking about this business, it sort of came to me at one point as an option. And the elder is like the reverence for elders that we see in indigenous communities. Elderberry is a healthy plant. The antioxidants in the berries are really healthy for you. So that's where Elderberry came from. And then the dot is in the name. Even though I was in Northern California during the dot-com boom, when they used dot in the name, we don't anymore. But I wanted to send a signal very clearly that this was an online play, a marketplace. So the dot's in the name, and then work, because that's what it's all about. So it's as simple as that. There's a more.
Sir, I was just going to say, like, there are a few company names out there that really, you know, somebody tells you like what the name of the company, and you're thinking, how did you come up with that name? I used to remember. So this company was in the tech sector, and they were doing some telephony switching or small telephony switching. And the company was called Brooktrout. I can't remember the name of the company. It's like, it's always stuck in my head. Brooktrout Systems. That's what it was called. And I could not really connect the dots, like, technology, Brooktrout, how the heck that works. But in your case, especially with the dot work, it sort of connects. I get it now. Elder, meaning elderly, you know, like us.
Not elderly, but elder.
Yeah.
And not elderly, though. That's not.
No, not elderly. Okay.
No. Elder meaning like the value of experience.
The value of the experience. That's right. Like the Aboriginal elder.
Yeah. But it's funny you mentioned about the names. I got a good story for you. So okay. I mentioned I was with a startup in Northern California. It was called ShareWave, by the way. We were an early Wi-Fi, home Wi-Fi pioneering expert before Wi-Fi. In fact, I was on a marketing committee for the wireless industry with Intel and Microsoft and a bunch of others. And I remember having a conference call, and this was when the technology was still called IEEE 802.11b. And a couple guys on the call, I think they were from Microsoft and Intel, said, hey, we came up with a consumer brand name for this. It's called Wi-Fi. It stands for wireless fidelity. What do you guys think? And I remember saying, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And then the name stuck, yeah, Wi-Fi. Maybe it resonates better with you than elderberry.org. I don't know. But then a little while later, we were invited to be part of a house of the future showing off all the latest technology. And it was in Berkeley, California, or, you know, across from San Francisco, and all the VCs are there and stuff. So it was kind of a cool opportunity. And I went in and I did the demo and talked to the VCs as they walked through and all that kind of stuff. And when it was over, I talked to some of the fellow people who were demoing there. And these guys said, from a company called Research in Motion. I thought, well, that's kind of a weird name. What do you guys do? They said, oh, we're from Canada, because I had said I was from Canada. And we said, oh, well, I'm from Canada too. And they said, well, we put an email in your palm of your hand. Part of me said, I don't want emails flying around all day. But anyway, that's my story about Research in Motion, a name that seemed kind of odd to me at that point.
That's right. And you know what? You just reminded me of 802.11. I have not heard that for a while. As soon as I heard you said 802.11, you just woke up the giant in me. It's called telecom industry.
Yeah, there you go.
Just a question, you know, like from an elderberry focused right now on interim fractional management. And now, you know, that you're part of like a, you're trying to create a community, if you will, around the, those talents that they're required on a fractional basis. So what is your working definition of fractional right now? How do you define it? Is there a definition for it or is it loose kind of thing?
Well, there is, but I think it's loosely understood. So the difference between fractional and interim and consultant, let's say. So consultant's pretty clear. It's more advisory. It's from the external perspective. It doesn't take on operational elements at all. The fractional, let's start with the interim. Interim will come in, and they may work full-time, but for a specified amount of time, they've got full operational responsibility to deliver the results. And so they're really in the knitting. They're involved in it like that, but for a specified amount of time. Fractional tends to be for a longer period of time, possibly, but part-time, not full-time like interim. And so kind of my point on elderberry.work is we don't care what you call it. We got what you need. So we're not limited to fractional or interim or consultant or freelancer or contractor. We do it all. So we customize a solution for what the client needs. And then,
yeah, that's a great, Dave. One of the things that maybe now because I'm more involved in it, but I'm noticing a gain in the traction of fractional work, either on variety of roles. So rather today versus 10 years ago, what changed? You know, you mentioned a few things earlier, but what changed? Why the dynamic and the acceleration and the shift toward fractional?
So two things. Fractional has traditionally been used mostly for C-suite. So CEO, COO, Chief Revenue Officer, Chief Human Resource Officer, Chief Financial Officer. And it's a value because you get top-tier talent for a fraction of the cost because they're fractional. Because you might pay them, one day a week or, you know, 2 days a month or, you know, 4 days, 8 days a month. It's not a full-time payment. You don't have the overhead. You can scale up and down, you know, quite quickly. But what we do is, it's growing. I would say in Canada, it's probably lagging a little bit compared to where it is in some markets, but it's growing and it's a huge opportunity for companies to be, I would say, much more dynamic and ambitious in what they're doing because they can really find the talent they need at a much more affordable basis on it. What we do is we make it an equal opportunity. We don't limit it just to C-suite. So we have people from all levels, from manager, director, vice president, up to C-suite, because often companies may not want to pay what a C-suite person wants, or maybe they want somebody who's been more operational more recently. And so that, you know, they might want people to embed with their people, cross-pollinate, share their insights and close knowledge gaps and leave behind some capacity that wasn't there before they went in. So having people at all those levels is really important so we can customize the solution just for what the client needs.
Now, on that note, where do you think the fractional talents are creating the biggest impact? Early stages, startups, or growth stage in a scale up, or more of a traditional subject matter expert, if you will, if in the modernization stage of a company?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly well beyond subject matter expertise. I mean, you can go to Upwork or Fiverr and find people who design websites or code for you. You know, subject matter expertise is just a greens fee for getting in the door. What experience buys you and what I talk about is and the value of experience and why we focus on that age 45 plus and being age forward about that and proud of the experience. I talk about five ways that they create value. So subject matter expertise is simply one square one. The second is knowledge and judgment and wisdom. You can't have shortcuts for that. You know, you can't get there faster. You got to be through the nuances of situations and learning and reacting and having successes and failures that you learn from. The third is soft skills. And we hear all the time about younger people, you know, growing up on screens often, being in isolation and COVID and being lagging in their soft skill development. So having people you bring in the organization, even temporarily, to kind of model the way and show the soft skill, finesse, communication, collaboration, resilience, accountability, those kinds of things, you know, set a really good example for the organization. The fourth level is multi-generational teams are known to be 20% more productive than unigenerational teams because of the value.
Is there validated stats on that?
It is, yeah, absolutely. I pulled that from an actual study. And then the fifth level of why they create value is cost effectiveness, because you're not using them full time, but they also hit the ground running. Their experience means they're coming in with sort of a template or a framework, what question to ask and how to move forward. And then there's not an ongoing onboarding process. It's simply, let's go, let's plug and play.
Now, let's say I'm a small business owner or I'm interested in hiring some fractional workers. In your opinion, and you've been doing this for a while, what are some of the mistakes you think a founder will make when they first try to use a fractional talent, a leader or mid-level management or however you want to characterize that? Because I'm assuming this idea that is fractional work, A, it's not new, but it's more prevalent now. And some people are used it before, but many, 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 they have not used it yet. And they're thinking about it. And if they are thinking about it, maybe completely new experience to them. So maybe guiding them through that would be helpful too.
Yeah, and that's one of the key initiatives of what I'm doing, is sort of helping to evangelize this use of fractional or interim or consultants. And I say, you know, we got a unique pipeline of talent, age 45 plus, curated, proven experience. We make them available on demand, self-serve. And so that combination of fractional, on demand, and curated pipeline of talent gives companies an ability to really accelerate what they're doing. But this is a new approach. And so part of what I'm doing is helping to evangelize about that. One of the challenges of fractional, because there's the business owner, you know, probably has been in the saddle for a while. They have certain rhythm in their organization. They may or may not be open to fresh ideas. You hear often a lot that, well, you know, our company's different. You know, it's unique, but you know, most of the consultants will tell you when they go in, it's not really that unique. What the client thinks is the problem isn't usually the problem. And so if there's an openness to that, no matter, can this person really do what I need or want? Mm-hmm. So those are...
Hey, Dave, on the subject of ageism, do you think this is a prevalent thing? Do you think that people are losing their jobs because of their age?
No question. And in fact, we're nearly 100 consultants signed up on our platform now. Everyone's got the same story about ageism and being tired of it. They're trying to get things that they're overqualified for, and they're not being hired into it because there's just such a volume of people and the age is a stigma. Age, society hasn't caught up. Its perceptions of aging are outdated. But with the longevity that we're facing now, if you've looked after yourself, you've got extended middle years of high productivity. It's not like longevity is bringing ill health years at the end of your life. It's extra middle years where you're highly productive. But society hasn't caught up with that yet. So
I've seen this before, and that movie have played many times, unfortunately, in the economy here in Canada and across the globe for that matter. People lose their jobs because of many things. One of them is age. But I don't feel it's necessarily because of their skills, because by then, you know, they wouldn't have lasted in a job because of their skills. If they didn't have skills, they wouldn't have lasted in a job, right? But to me, most of the time, they lose their jobs at that age, generally speaking. Each case is different, obviously, because they've worked for so many years with a certain company, they accumulated a higher salary. And it becomes economics plus aging, which then all of a sudden, that ageism gets tagged into it. But it's a combination of higher salary and age at that time. Evidently, you got to get to some sort of a higher salary because of your tenure in a specific company for that long, right? So economy may be playing a role here economically.
It absolutely is. But it's usually because they look at the value in a much more narrow way. So it's just they look at how much do you cost and what is your job, instead of those other four areas that I said are part of the five ways that we create value through our experience. Those are hard to quantify. So companies make, I would say, misinformed decisions about that cost of someone versus the value they create. and they're really underestimating. But I would say on the ageism front, I think it's a much bigger issue for large organizations than it is for smaller. I think smaller are more interested in, like, what can you do for me? This is what I need. I will say, though, just sort of underpinning everything is we do tend to have an economy that has a lot of businesses that are business people that are somewhat risk averse. And part of it, you know, we need to overcome that.
You know, but you mentioned, you started the conversation that you've done business on in a variety of regions around the world, specifically on the South side and the Canadian side.
Middle East as well.
Yeah. So I'm sure you've seen a different attitude toward risk taking in business from place to another. I tend to agree with you, having sold in pretty much every corner. I would say, because I've lived most of my life here in Canada, I would say the Canadian buyer on the business side is paralysis by analysis. I guess I take it that way because I've been down that road with my friends and colleagues here in Canada. A pitch, normally it means long sales cycle before somebody make a decision on something versus other areas where, as geographical areas, where people say, okay, I like the idea. Time is money. I'm going to take a decision now. And if it doesn't work, I'll just do another decision. Versus in Canada, God bless them, God bless us all here, is that when we make a decision, it's like, oh my God, the sky is falling. If I make that decision, I might lose my job if I get it wrong. So there is a bit of that associated with it. But now you and I talked about this before, is that the intellectual property that is, or the intellectual knowledge, if you will, that is embedded into that aging workforce, that it's over 45 as you define them, Dave. I would say there's economical price for that. By them exiting the workforce, there's an economical price for that. Did you take a look at that? Is there a quantification somewhere that says, you know, age 45 and above, if they exit the workforce now, here's the cost for the economy? And putting them back into the economy, maybe that's a net positive. I don't know.
Yeah, no, there has been work done on that. And it's absolutely a brain drain that we're facing right now. You hear a lot about the knowledge economy and the importance of trying to win that. Well, the OECD has a way they measure, quantify the knowledge economies in each country. And we've slid way down the list. I think we were somewhere 18 or so, and we've slid down to like 36, 35 on the ranking of countries on our knowledge intensity. So, you know, my argument is we can't afford to have this brain drain. We already have had it, you know, going down to the U.S., et cetera. But this is another kind of brain drain, which is demographic, not geographic. And we can't afford to lose these people who have all this knowledge that we could match up with entrepreneurs who, many of them say to me, I'm glad to hear what you're doing, because to be honest, I'm a tech person. I don't really know how to commercialize what I'm doing. And my point is, well, why would we ask engineers and scientists and academics to commercialize things? You know, they're the inventing, they're doing the R&D. Let's harness them up with people who've got proven experience with commercializing things. And we've got lots of people on our platform, and we'll continue to attract them that we could, and we do plug them in to help accelerate that process and capture the value.
Now, let's move a little bit on and to how Elderberry helps small to medium businesses de-risk some of the acceleration or some of the founding as you're going through your founding foundational time as a business. Now, you know, from what I understand from Elderberry and from what I've talked to you before, Elderberry is a B2B marketplace that you give SMBs the place where they can find on-demand access to curated consultants or experts on a fractional or interim basis, project base. That must be a good news for a small, medium business company where you are constricted to a budget per se and hiring high skill, high calibered individuals to come and join you may be cost prohibitive. These guys probably used to make hundreds of thousands of dollars out there, and you want to hire them for a fraction of that, and they probably won't be able to afford them on a full-time, but on a fractional basis, they may be able to add a lot of value. So could you walk us through a typical journey? Say, and I'm sure you have many of those, a startup founder that would come to Elderberry and to fix a problem. And what happened next?
Yeah, there's many, many entry points. And I was tracking along with you, and I had, okay, I got a point here, here, and here. And now they're all kind of hiding in there. So
that's all right. Take your time. This is what this conversation is about.
Yeah. So let's tease them out. I think you started the question with about how do we help de-risk. Why, if you can avoid the costs of learning and making mistakes in that learning curve, and you can be way more accelerated along the learning curve by bringing in people with experience, I mean, why not do that? Especially when they're I also hire inexperienced people because that's really all we had, and we hired them. Benefits, and they'll accelerate quickly. And if you're now,
thanks for that. I really appreciate it, David. And very interesting insights, specifically for those listeners who are struggling with this. And there's many of them. I mean, any industry in a knowledge-based economy today, and that's where you are, and that's where I am in a knowledge-based economy, they're struggling with that. And if we look at the makeup of the knowledge-based economy, it's formed of the 80-20 rules that would apply for this particular economy quite a bit, actually. 80% of the economy revolves around the top 20% of the economy in the knowledge base, whatever that is, marketing, whatever it is. And also the majority of the companies in the knowledge-based economy are small to medium businesses. The majority of them, I want to say 80% of the number of the companies, not the dollar value generated, are in that space of small to medium enterprise companies globally. So from your perspective, from elderberry.org recently joined with WIL group, right? Did I get that correctly?
That's right. Worldwide Interim Leadership is what WIL stands for. Okay. And it's a network of independent recruiters, executive recruiters in a number of different countries that spans 40 countries in total. So it's quite exciting, actually, because we know Canada wants to diversify its exports, international business, away from reliance on the U.S. So I can help those kinds of companies through elderberry.org in two ways. One is Canadian-based consultants who know that target country that the Canadian company wants to go to, and they can help sort of go along with them and be a guide and help them avoid some mistakes, including who they partner with. And then we can also, in parallel or in sequence, get boots on the ground in that country through my WIL partnership. So depending upon the country, I will contact, once the client tells me what's needed, I can get them boots on the ground, a short list of candidates through my contact in that country, actional, interim, executive, whatever you like. And then for companies wanting to come and do business in Canada, through my network, will partner in their country of origin will come to me and say, hey, this is the client, here's what they want to do in Canada, you know, find a short list and we'll get the placement there. So it opens up a whole bunch more opportunities, both for businesses and for the consultants on the platform.
Mm-hmm. And so in your opinion right now, based on what you have in, you said you have about 100 candidates on the platform.
Yeah.
What is it the most requested right now? What is the jobs that are most requested? So for those who are listening, perhaps they can go subscribe to your platform.
Yeah. So what I've done is I've streamed the consultants into two key issues facing Canada. One is about commercialization and growth. And so we have a bunch of consultants in that stream. You know, it's cross-functional, so there are lots of roles in marketing and operations.
Yeah, they are cross-functional, these guys.
And I've streamed them into productivity and optimization. We know often companies want to focus on that. And so there's lots of pickup on both of those, depending upon the stage of growth of the company. But process optimization is important. I don't know if we're going to talk about AI or not, but there's certainly elements
there
to talk about. Yeah.
So, you know, since you opened AI, why don't we continue on with the conversation of AI and the impact on what you're doing, what you're seeing from your side. We talk a lot about AI on this channel and the impact on how are we going to be adjusting as workforce, as professionals, as human in general, to the integration of AI into our daily lives. So how is that impacting your, from what you're seeing, like your consultants that they're currently working with you and your customers that they're coming on your platform seeking help? Is that has any positive or negative impact, and what is it?
So there was a great article in the Globe and Mail not too long ago about AI adoption in corporate Canada, and they listed a whole bunch of examples, and they virtually all were about productivity and cost reduction. And you know, before AI, when there was something that gave you that opportunity to cost reduce, you just did it. You didn't make a big deal about it, right? But here's the challenge. Canada faced a fundamental problem in growth. We have a crisis in growth. Our economy is sluggish. The GDP is not growing. And so we need growth. And my concern is we have corporate leaders who are saying, yeah, okay, we're getting pressure to use AI. It's a shiny little trinket. Here's what we're doing. Here's our AI plan when it's all about cost reduction. We need to grow our way out of the problem. And so AI, I'm worried, is a distraction for all that. You mentioned earlier about sort of de-risking. Experience is needed to give some guardrails around AI because it may give you wrong answers. It may hallucinate. You need people who learn through experience to interpret what that's all about. And I worry also about younger people coming into the workforce using AI, and the studies are finding, and I'm sure this is going to keep getting, you know, showing more and more evidence behind this, but they're not learning critical thinking skills. And so they're using AI and it solves it for them. So what's going to happen when they want a more senior job? They won't be qualified for it. And in fact, what's happening a lot is a lot of these entry-level jobs are just being deleted. Companies are saying, forget it, I'll just get AI to do that. So we need growth, and that's going to take a mindset focus. We have the talent out there. We're just not aligning it. And we got to stop waiting for the government to do things for us. And the other thing is, don't be paralyzed by the state of this perilous economy and the world that we're facing right now. This is the time to be bold. Bring in people with proven experience to drive your biggest dreams and help you move forward. With their experience, can de-risk it, can improve your probability of your results and help your execution.
You know, I love how you mentioned it, how you said it, you know, instead of solving our economical problem by cost cutting, why don't we solve the economical problem by growth? And it just, you know, if you take it from a macro level or from a micro level at a business level, like macro meaning like the entire country, GDP, etc., then if you take it down to a miniaturized way of looking at it at a company level, and that's always been the dilemma. You know, how many times do I have these stories? As you know, I do a fractional CRO. That's my primary work. You know, I keep talking to people. I said, solve the problem by increasing revenue. If you have a lot of revenue, if you have revenue, you have a problem to solve. If you don't have revenue, you don't have a problem to solve. You can shut it down. You can shut it down anyway. Nobody's going to solve that. You know, that's what people go to first is, and I think this is still remnants a little bit from remaining a little bit from that period that we went through during COVID. You remember when people went working remotely and they started fixing, you know, it looked better on the financial statements because we have lesser real estate costs, we have lesser IT costs, you know, and people got help from the government. So the financial statements, it was looking very, very rosy. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I don't know if you remember that, but during when everything was chaotic from a pandemic perspective, the stocks were doing very well because the financial statements were doing very well. Like the outlook on companies were doing very well.
And they were doing well because of surge pricing. They realized that they can make more profit by focusing on marginal revenue as opposed to total revenue. So it used to be they'd sell a million widgets and make 10% margin. And they realized we could sell a whole lot less widgets if we just charge a whack more and make more margin per unit. And so that's still lingering with us today. You know, we're facing cost of living crisis really across the world.
Yep. Like I tell you, like you mentioned AI earlier, like in the article that you said from a Globe and Mail, I remember conversations like just recent, like a few months ago, somebody comes to me and says, hey, we want to develop an AI app. And they don't know why, because the boss told them to. We need to look at something with AI. Okay, but what is it? What are you trying to solve? They haven't yet defined that. And not because they're bad or they're thinking differently, etc. Not because they don't know what they're doing. That's not the case at all. Because the idea is so pressured, it's so shoved down so fast that I want results now. Nobody's taking the time to analyze where it doesn't work and where it does not work and where does it fit, where it does not fit.
And in fact, Gartner Group, McKinsey, KPMG, doesn't matter who, they'll tell you 75 to 85% of AI initiatives fail for these very reasons. You know, what I would and what the consultants on the platform, because I've talked to many of them about it, would start with the issue. Don't start with solution. AI is a solution. So if you have you know, bad processes and under qualified people, et cetera, et cetera. And too much overhead and bottlenecks and all that sort of thing. That's not going to get any better if you just bring a bunch of AI in there.
100%.
Start with what's the issue. And
correct.
As I said, it's not always what you think it is. So be a little open-minded about that. Bring an outside perspective on that.
Great. Now, let's talk a little bit about the social purpose of Elderberry. Can you talk a little bit about the social purpose for the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a consistent theme in my life. I mentioned I did undergraduate environmental science, and last 25 years I've been able to make businesses and, in fact, global supply chains more environmentally and socially sustainable. So it's part of my DNA, and this startup, Elderberry.org, it's part of this. Our social purpose or mission is about helping these two audiences that we're serving. If we can help them be successful, then we can be successful. But our mission is to help them. So age 45 plus business people, as they're aging up, they'll have a place for their value they can create, so they have a sense of purpose. They're active, they're engaged, and they're earning some income. So we're there to support them. And then, of course, startups and SMBs aren't the engine of our economy the way they need to be. They're most of the number of businesses in the economy, but they're not the driver the way they could be. And so we're trying to help support that by helping them accelerate that valuation. A key part, so those are the two audiences. The third one is providing underserved communities a much more direct path to getting what they need. So let's say you're a recent immigrant and you came in and you're 45 plus, you got some business experience. You'll often hear in Canada, you don't have Canadian experience. Well, we can help plug them into more direct experiences where that may not be quite the same issue. Or let's say you're a refugee, you came in, you want to start a business. Well, come to elderberry.org and find people who can cost effectively and quickly give you the consulting you need to help you succeed in that business that you're starting up. So that's all part of the mission. You know, sort of underbaked in it is this idea of ageism and overcoming, getting healthier perceptions about aging and the value of experience.
You know what? Listening to all this, I can't believe, you know, if this solution was existing like years ago, it would have been a much better place for many people. It's good to have it now. It's good to have elderberry.org right now as a platform. And as we come close to the end of our conversation, Dave, I give you the mic for a few minutes here. If I missed anything that I have not yet covered that you'd like people to get to know about elderberry.org and the platform that we have not targeted, that we have not discussed yet, my main objective is to show you to the industry or to the listeners of this podcast in the light of a thought leader on fractional work, which I've talked to you many times. I can attest to the fact of your expertise, your professionalism. You're creating an initiative that is helping others on both sides, the businesses and the fractional workers. And it's such an admirable thing to do. You know, I've seen people losing their job at the age of 45 and never been able to find a job after that. So this is great. Are we supposed at this point in this types of economies that when you hit 45, that's a message to the young people too. Don't think you're off of the hook kind of thing. You're still in your early 30s or late 20s, but 45 will roll around and you'll be in the same boat. We're all on the same train, right, Dave? So did I miss anything you'd like the listeners to know anything more about Elderberry?
Well, thanks, Rob. Yeah, I'd really like to leave people with the understanding that we have a success formula for them, the recipe. There's three ingredients to it. So it's the use of fractional or interim leadership and functional experience. So you don't have to pay full time. You can bring in proven experience. But the way you use them is a fractional or interim or less than full time without the overhead that comes with being employees. That's the first part. The second is this curated pipeline of talent, age 45 plus, proven experience, vetted, so that they can use people, hit the ground running. And then the third element is what we provide, which is kind of unique, is on-demand, self-serve access to these consultants. So time is of the essence. Don't wait around waiting for other people to find the talent that you need when it's hard to find. We get the hard to find, we bring it in, And on our platform, it's on-demand self-serve. We recently launched an AI-guided bot that matches people. So a company can put in rather complex prompt of what its needs are, not just I need an HR or a marketing person. They can put in to the extent that they know what they want, here's what it is. And the AI bot goes into our database of consultants and looks at their full profile, not just the label or categorization of HR or marketing, whatever. Because when you have as much experience as 45 plus have, you've got experience much broader than can be categorized. So really important, the bot can go into the full profile of somebody and use that. And so you get an instantaneous shortlist of consultants that then you can then talk to. And there's no risk to it in terms of cost up front. It's free to browse. It's free to list people's experience. Or companies can post jobs there or gigs there as well. And sign up for free. Message people on the platform for free. Get your shortlist for free. Negotiate with the favorite candidate. Finalize that, the scope of work, the fees. It's only when you push a button and say, I commission work from the consultant, that then our platform fees get introduced. And it's to keep fees low for everybody, it's a hybrid fee. So it's a small fee paid by the company. It's sort of a finder's fee to make it efficient for them. And for the consultant, there's a small fee there as well. It's also making it sort of a finder's fee for other people into opportunities. And if we can make enough profits to reinvest in the business, then our mission, our social enterprise, can come to fruition. And I would say at scale, social economically, we can have a really big dynamic effect on our economy and on society.
So this is all good, and I really appreciate the way you've positioned it. You know, for other compared to other platforms where you have to pay for every single thing you do, for every feature you engage on the website, there's a lot of frees out there for the audience. I highly encourage you to check out elderberry.work. And if you have any questions for Dave, or you have not yet met Dave and you'd like to connect with him, toss me an introduction request. I'll be happy to introduce you to Dave. He's connected to me on LinkedIn, and I'll be happy to introduce you to Dave if you're interested in having a conversation with him. Dave, I want to thank you on behalf of the listeners, on behalf of the audience, for coming in on the podcast today and joining me on this conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Robin, and a pleasure to be with you, and I enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully it was of value to people.
And I'm sure it will. Again, I want to thank the audience for listening in as far as they listened to on this conversation till the end of this video. I really appreciate it, and the audio. Thank you again to the audience for commenting, sharing, liking the content that I put out there. Again, this is not a money maker endeavor for me, this podcast. Far from it. It's a one-man show. It's me. I don't have a marketing budget. I don't have anybody in the background with a bunch of hamsters running the wheel here. Just me, and I produce these contents during the week, and I edit on the weekend, and we publish the next week. So Dave, from me and the audience, thanks again. And to the audience, thank you again for listening in, and I will see you at the next episode. Thank you so much.